Next conversation today is with CU Regent Wanda James, who is running for Congress in Colorado's 1st Congressional District, which is Denver, long represented by Democrat Diana DeGette. Wanda James, welcome in.
Thank you for having me.
So Congresswoman DeGette has served Colorado for, what, 3 decades now or so in Congress?
November will be 30 years.
Why should she be replaced?
Because she's been there for 30 years. So look, nobody can continue to do a great job when you've lived under that golden dome for 30 years. Because just by the nature of being there for 30 years, you're no longer in and amongst the people. You're no longer bringing good ideas to the table. And quite frankly, after 30 years of doing a job, you're just not that into it. And when you compare her to a Jonah Goose or to Jason Crow, I mean, it's amazing seeing them out there and talking to people and bringing ideas. And every time you open up your computer, there they are. Where is the Congresswoman for Colorado's capital city?
So you just think she's not visible enough, not effective enough, or both?
Both.
Okay. You support term limits for Congress. What's
absolutely 100%. Not just for Congress, but for the Senate and for SCOTUS. Because once again, nobody but nobody should be in office for 30 years. When those numbers come up, I'm happy to have the conversations about those numbers, but I would say probably 12 to 14 years for Congress, 16 to 18, or 18 years for the Senate, and then 18 years for SCOTUS. Anything more than that, you're just taking up space, and ruling for more than a generation just makes no sense.
There are going to be progressives who hear that and point to Bernie Sanders and think you're
absolutely right. Bernie Sanders, one of my very favorites, Maxine Waters. There's a whole bunch of them on the other side. Chuck Grassley, Chuck Schumer. There's a bunch of people that just absolutely need to go. And there are other ways to lead. Just because you're not in Congress for 30 years doesn't mean that you can't still be leading and be effective. And one other key thing here, the difference between me and some of the progressives, this isn't about age. This is about 30 years. So if you get elected at 28 years old, I don't think you should be there until you're 62 years old, right?
So for a Democratic primary voter who has decided that it's time for Diana to get to go, why you and not the third person in this race, Malak Kyros?
Lived experience, an actual resume, and somebody that's ready to hit the floor to hit the ground rolling as soon as I get there. I've already created policy. I have relationships with our senators, with our congresspeople, with the Black Congressional Caucus. I have been working in not only just Washington, but almost every state in the nation when it came to passing cannabis laws, to doing DEI. I'm already an elected official. I get this inside and out. I am your outsider insider. This isn't new to me. I'm just going to be new to this seat.
So, in fact, one of the things that you're running on is the fact that you are an entrepreneur. You've started a number of businesses, including the cannabis space, Simply Pure, America's first Black-owned dispensary. Mm-hmm. What is the current state of your business?
So the current state of our business is on hold. Being a Schedule 1 illegal drug, we just can't move our business to different locations. And in discussions with our landlord for the last 6 months, the landlord presented us with a $98 per square foot lease, which if anybody is following cannabis, there's just no way that that would have worked for a small business. That was not a lease that we could have signed. So we are currently looking for a new location.
So your business is closed. It's not functional right now.
Not right now.
Okay. When did it close?
It closed on March 31st.
Okay. So are you currently out of the cannabis business? Do you have other active businesses?
Yep. We still have active businesses. We still have Simply Pure licensing. We have a licensee in New Jersey. So I am very active. I'm still doing podcasts. We're still helping other businesses get open. And we are currently looking for more licensees.
Got it. So do you own anything in New Jersey or just license your name to somebody?
We just license our name.
License the name. Okay. On a lot of core issues, it seems like you, Congresswoman DeGette, and Malak Kyros are pretty similar ideologically and positionally. What is one issue where you think you truly have divergence with them on an issue that you think the voters should take notice of?
There's a number of places where I think that we're different. I think when we start to look at small businesses and how small businesses should be funded and looked at. I look at it that small business is the backbone of America. So many people want to work for small businesses but can't because small businesses don't have the option of being able to compete with the big businesses when it comes to health care when it comes to benefits, just because of the cost involved. So for me, being an entrepreneur, I am bringing something to that table that neither one of my opponents have any idea or idea how it works or how it runs America.
Where do you differ from them on policy as it relates to that federal policy around small business?
So when I look at federal policy around business, I would also look at why it's important to make sure that we are removing the issues to getting into business sooner. Once again, when you talk about the cannabis business or the restaurant business that we own, it can take you up to a year to open up a restaurant. It can take you up to 2 or 3 years to open up a cannabis business. And during that time, the entrepreneur is just whatever money that they had to open to be able to put into their business is just depleted. So once again, this is where I'm saying I am bringing real life to the table, and that affects my policy decisions because I understand what it's like to actually be out there signing the front of the check, speaking to people, and working with people.
But what is the specific federal policy around small businesses that you would
have? Fully funding of the SBA, making sure that we are looking, like I said, at removing any of the barriers to being able to open up your business faster. So those are just some of the things that, from a congressional standpoint, yes, it affects things on the city and state level, but when you're bringing money through from Congress as to where you're putting money in the state.
From an outsider's perspective, it seems like your campaign out of the three hasn't really caught fire, hasn't gotten traction. I think Diane DeGette has got a ton of establishment support,
yep.
A ton of fundraising.
Yep.
Malak Kuros has got a lot of progressive energy and a lot of fundraising that has come with that.
Yep.
And your campaign doesn't have those things. Why do you think that your campaign hasn't gotten traction?
For that reason, exactly. One of the things that is the most upsetting about running for office against an incumbent is I have a lot of support. Let's be very clear about that. When it comes to people filling in the ballot, I believe that I have tremendous a lot of support. When it comes to raising money, the problem in getting the organizations behind me that I need to get behind me will not go up against an incumbent, will not go up against the establishment. I hate to be here on Nine News right now and calling people out, so I'm not going to. But if you can imagine some of the big orgs in D.C. that should be behind me, that are behind me personally, but just aren't coming out publicly for that. I am supported by Higher Heights. I'm supported by the Collective Pack. Not just that, I'm supported by almost the big names that you can name here in Denver. I'm supported by, from Ken Salazar to Wilma and Wellington Webb, Joe Salazar, Nita Gonzalez. The list just goes on of the people here in Denver who are supporting this campaign. I believe I probably have more endorsements of Democrats here in CD1 as people than any of my opponents.
So if your core argument is that Congresswoman DeGette is no longer effective and should be replaced, and there is a challenger to her who is well-funded and also has a base of support. Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable with the fact that you remaining in this race without the fundraising and so forth could be the reason that DeGette stays in Congress?
Absolutely not. Because I think that the third person in this race is funded by left-wing fringe groups. And while they are noisy and they're making a lot of noise and they have a lot of impact on social media, I don't believe that that's where the voter here in CD1 is looking to have their next congressperson come from.
You are on the CU Board of Regents.
I am.
Although you've been stripped of a lot of your duties by your colleagues.
I have.
Who censured you. You're suing them.
Mm.
Fellow Democrat Regent Elliot Hood said that you, quote, put your interests or the interests of your trade, meaning your cannabis business, above the interests of the university that you serve.
Mm.
I know you don't believe that that's the case, but that's what your Democratic colleagues on the Board of Regents think.
Mm.
Here's my question. How can voters be assured that if you go to Congress, you will be more than just an advocate for the cannabis industry?
My gosh, because cannabis has nothing to do with anything when this race or when this situation at CU is concerned. This isn't about the censure. Well, it is about the censure. I mean, boards censure people all the time, and censure just basically means that we didn't like what you did. The issue with what the Board of Regents did was the sanctions, when they stripped me of all of my leadership ability, the ability to be on committees, the ability to act as a regent. That, in turn, is the issue. And they did that with no end date. They did it for my entire term on the board, and I have another 2.5 years on the board. My interest in cannabis had nothing to do with what had happened. That had to do with strict racist images that the University of Colorado Anschutz School of Public Health put out. And that has been what has been clearly talked about in every conversation that I have had, is a $6 billion research institution put out some of the most racist images that I have seen in almost my entire life. They were just caricatures of Black people, Black infants, Black children, Black boys, with every racial trope that you can imagine since slavery that has been used to dehumanize Black people, as used as to what happens should your mother have smoked a joint or ate a gummy while she was breastfeeding. That wasn't anything that as a regent or as an elected official or as a human being that I could have stood by.
So you would have been comfortable if that campaign on THC had the same messaging but just had a whiter Hispanic child?
No, absolutely not. Because the messaging in itself, those tropes were ridiculous. The fact that you had no impulse control, that you would have lacked intellect, lacked curiosity, inability to have conversations. I mean, it went into all of the things that are just not true about human beings.
So your concern did go beyond race, and it was about what the university was saying about cannabis use.
Well, not about cannabis use, but about people. I mean, and they used Black caricatures of Black people, which was amazingly insulting. So no, if those were white caricatures in those same type of ways, it would have been insulting. Not as insulting as it was when they just used the Black caricatures. And those.
But that brings us back to the fundamental point, which is that your colleagues thought that you were putting the interests of your business and your industry above the university, which you were elected to represent.
But Kyle, that doesn't make sense. Because if the university is putting out racist information, that is the basis of where this comes from. This isn't the first time that Anschutz has put out any type of studies on cannabis. They've been doing that for decades. They have been, you know, putting out, anti-consumption and different things about cannabis now since cannabis has been legal in Colorado. And I've never once had a qualm with that.
You're a veteran.
I am.
What was the last just war that the United States fought in?
I mean, we can go back. I mean, obviously, World War II, in the liberation of Europe and the Jewish community. I mean, once you got into, you know, issues with, you know, the Korean War and with Vietnam.
You're
my
next,
goodness.
Yeah.
My father said two tours in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Was that a just war?
No.
Okay. The Gulf Wars?
No.
This most recent action in Iran?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'm anti-war, Kyle, and we've talked about this, or I talk about it a lot. I talk about this in hearing about my father's experience in Vietnam. When you ask if that was a just war, no, it wasn't. And what we did with we lost 58,000 people and, you know, hundreds of thousands of vets that came back that we still haven't done right by and taken care of. And then when I think about what my mother went through as a small child in Liverpool, England, she was one of the children put on trains and taken out of the cities to be able to protect their future. And when she came back, my mother's formal education and her life that she knew before 11 and after 11 was severely changed. So when I look at things that are happening in Ukraine, it's heartbreaking to me. When I see what has happened in, not just in Gaza, but when I see what's happening to the Iranian people, just saddens me. 167 little girls killed on the very first day of this war.
How would that inform your work in Congress then as it relates to military aid for Ukraine and military aid for Israel?
I believe that we need to be able to support Ukraine because Ukraine should be protected against a superpower such as Russia. And when we're allowing superpowers to go in indiscriminately and take land, resources, people, from countries that don't have the ability to stand up against the superpowers, this is where I believe that where America should be standing up and should be protecting those countries. We need to be careful about the messages that we're sending worldwide because we cannot allow China to go into Taiwan. And as you're well aware, Taiwan is the world's resource in building chips, and we need that resource. And what an amazing small democratic country it is, and it should not be under the rule of a dictatorship.
How about continued U.S. military aid and support for Israel?
So no, I think what's happening with Israel right now, and even Trump is having issues with Netanyahu. And let me be very, very clear. I think something where
you said no, people are going to want to know what that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I just want you to clarify because let me ask you a more direct question. Okay, mm-hmm. Do you support continued U.S. military aid to Israel?
No, I do not. Because what's happening right now with Israel is they have brought us into a, well, they brought Trump into a war that we don't want to be into. And the issue is not Israel or the Israelis. The issue that Israel has is a Netanyahu problem. Just as America has a Trump problem, they have a right-wing, and I'm going to say war criminal right now in charge of their country that has taken them into unjust wars. So we, as America, should not be engaging in wars that we are brought into that don't concern us. And we have seen with the Straits of Hormuz, our gas prices, the fact that we've already lost servicemen. And nobody, when I speak to them, when I say, why are we in war in Vietnam, in Iran, nobody can give you that answer.
Malat Kiros is criticizing Congresswoman DeGette for opposing efforts to reduce the Pentagon budget. Would you vote to reduce the Pentagon budget?
Absolutely.
Anything specifically jump out at you?
So it's interesting to me, a number of years ago, the Navy told the Pentagon that we don't need any more aircraft carriers, and we got one anyway. So when you start to look at our military-industrial complex, there is half of the budget or somewhere that goes to America protecting the world is what we do. I don't have problems with defense, which is why we have the Department of Defense, not the Department of War. But the world has changed now. And so now we are looking at things such as drones. We have surveillance, different types of surveillance equipment, different types of security and diplomacy that is available to us. Those are the things that should be funded, not necessarily more aircraft carriers and things that actually take us into war, because that's not going to be the future of defense in the world.
What are some specific things that Congress can do to make life more affordable in Colorado?
Oh, my goodness. We can fund and ensure that we fund the National Housing Trust Fund, which allows builders to be able to build true affordable housing. I think that is something that is absolutely key, and it affects both renters and buyers. And as you know, when you first buy your first home, that is the very first piece to building wealth in America, or wealth for a family. Secondly, being a regent and being a product of public school from K through 16, we need to fully fund our public school system. Every child in America should be given a first-class education, and every student that wants to go to college in America should have the ability to go to a public university in a way that they can afford it. Quite frankly, I believe that there should be some forms of free credits that allow you to go to public university. And an educated society is the best that America can do. We also need to make sure that there is child tax credits to be able to put more money into families' pockets. And we need to make sure that we are allowing for, once again, small businesses to be able to take advantage of things like Medicare for All. We should absolutely never have to have bankruptcy or people choosing between being at home, taking care of themselves by recovering from being sick, than having to go to work sick because they can't afford to take a day off.
So I think you just answered the question I was going to ask you that moment. You do support universal single payer.
100%.
Okay. Let's talk about immigration. You've called for ICE to be abolished.
Abolished.
And for Customs and Border Patrol to handle securing the nation's borders. How would interior immigration enforcement work in your mind if we got rid of ICE?
So once again, to me, these are city and state level situations that are going to be happening here. And I think that's why we have a police force. And the issue that we see with ICE right now is it has become a private military for the White House. And that should terrify every American, because all it's doing is getting us used to seeing military boots on the ground, walking around your cities, people with masks on, no insignia, we don't know who these folks are, pulling people out of cars, taking children out of schools. That's not who we are in America.
So you think it should be up to local and state law enforcement to determine if there's an immigration enforcement priority on the interior of the country?
Well, once again, no, because that's going to be a federal issue, right? But we're dealing with Customs and Border Patrol when that is happening, because they're going to be telling us what's going to be happening. But as far as enforcing and arresting people or bringing folks in for questioning, yes, that should be a state and local.
I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out, because then you've got states like Colorado, which obviously restrict cooperation with federal immigration. So if you have a state like Colorado that says, we're not going to assist with federal immigration, and you take away ICE, and CBP is just doing the borders, does that mean that there's no interior immigration enforcement in Colorado then?
Well, yeah, I think that there's still immigration enforcement, but then we're basing it on, as quote-unquote the Trump administration said in the first place, that we're only going after the criminals. So if we're only going after criminals, then go after criminals.
So then local and state law enforcement will go after people they believe to be criminal targets.
Absolutely.
But then at what point would they then enter the immigration system?
As soon as you are processed, we will know whether you're in this country legally or illegally.
Okay, so would you like a modicum of cooperation then between local and state law enforcement and the feds in telling them who we have, when they're getting out, that kind of thing?
So short answer is yes. Asterisk on it, because what does that mean? Do we just turn over people, you know, because of, you know, you got arrested for having too many speeding tickets? I think that we have to absolutely look at what is the human and dignified piece that we're going to be looking at as how we're removing people from the country and why. And on top of that, Kyle, we should be allowing too. So once again, I'm against making people criminals for no good reason as well too, right? So we should allow people to be able to come to this country to be able to work legally and go back to their country and come back to America for whether it's farming or harvesting types, you know, of situations, or dear God, to be a student here at the University of Colorado or public universities throughout the United States. We are losing great minds because people are now fearful to even come study at our university systems. So we have to be open to having people here, and this is a way that we would be able to do it.
On the issue of energy, you said that China's eating our lunch on that.
Yep.
Democrats need to get comfortable with the idea of nuclear power.
Yep.
In Colorado?
Yes. Absolutely.
Where and how? What else?
So once again, I am not an expert on nuclear power right now. I am just beginning, like everybody else is, to learn on how that is working. And I've been looking at what China is doing in developing power, because the issue this brought came in with the issue of AI and data centers. And we don't want to have to keep using our precious resources or putting data centers in poor neighborhoods that are driving up costs, causing environmental justice concerns and all of those things that are happening because of the huge amounts of power that we need here in America and are going to continue to need here in America. So when I look at what China is doing and the fact that they are developing nuclear power and solar power and wind power and all of this green energy power, we need to be invested in that absolutely 100%, because I mean, AI is not going away. And even if you just look around your studio, you can just see all of the new forms of technology that we're going to need to be able to use and have access to energy for that.
Two more questions. If Democrats take back the House, there will be pressure to impeach President Trump. Do you think that that's a worthwhile endeavor?
100%. Not just impeach him, but this man is a criminal. And I believe that he has crossed the line numerous times on criminal activity, definitely on enriching himself in the emoluments clause. I mean, there are so many different way oversteps that this administration has gone off, and not just the president. I believe that so many members of his cabinet have done the same thing.
Races for Congress typically focus on federal policy, and with good reason, obviously, but the impact that a member of Congress can have is often intensely local, right? Mm-hmm. Is there something that you think that Congresswoman DeGette should have brought home for Denver in her decades that she has not, that you would seek to make a priority of yours, something local that you could deliver?
So once again, one of the things that Congresswoman DeGette says that she does a lot of is bringing in local money. But I think sometimes when you're bringing in that local money, you've got to make sure that local money is working in the way that it should. When you look at the Colfax corridor, we are losing small businesses all the way down that. Those were done with federal dollars. And while I think it was important to develop the business corridor and to make it work, I think that we should have put the business owners and labor at the very, very front of those conversations to make sure that the money that we are bringing into Colorado is being used in the most effective way possible and that it is actually benefiting the people who we want it to benefit.
Is that a local implementation issue on the city, or do you think there's something the feds could have done to make sure those federal dollars were used differently?
I think that there is something that the feds could have done to make sure that those federal dollars were used differently. And once again, this is where I definitely think where the Congresswoman has not done a good job, because she is not out there meeting and having conversations in the same way that you see a Jonah Goose or a Jason Crow having those conversations to make sure that we are leading the conversation on what we want to see happen with those funds.
Wanda James, I appreciate your time.
I appreciate you too, Cal Clark.